Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and it is your Weaver of Context, Caroline Casey, reporting in from Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, with the dogs, with healing Big Mama Solstice Ocean. Glorious. It is my childhood beach. And right now, for the astro-mythological guiding news, says, you know, for all of us, our first lake, our first ocean, our first tree, all of these are important things that we carry. And yet, CNN reports, due to rising global climate crisis seawater temperatures, it is conducive to the flourishing of this flesh-eating bacteria called Vibrio. God, it even sounds like a pharmaceutical, you know, from handling seafood, crabbing, you know, the horrible outcomes, including death, all the side effects of any pharmaceutical, you know, break in skin or uncooked shellfish from the Delaware Bay. Oh, that does it for oysters. Oh, no. And Texas waters. And I remember as a very young girl, I was at home sick from school, which is where I did most of my best reading and thinking. And I read this book on Minamata in Japan about the industrial mercury poisoning of the ocean. And I think I was really just 9, 10, but it made a huge impression. And people fell grievously ill from the toxins, and they cried out in horrified bewilderment. This stayed with me forever. How could the sea, our great healing ally, cause us harm? So as part of our journey, an emperor of China said, the books we read as children are like suns that illumine our path compared to books read later as mere candle flames. And it's like, oh, all of those things. So here we are. It's going to take dedicated magic. It's going to take trickster nature's evolutionary genius, who is the keeper of democracy and the democratic animism of respectful to and fro and alliances and treaties on which democracy depends. And it was heartening that all of the Goldman Environmental Awards recipients spoke unabashedly about their alliance with what they love, understanding that the water, the trees, the air is living allies. You know, it's also Knocked Down the House, you know, again, the impressive documentary on Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and three other extraordinary women, is the quality of magic that triumphs against all odds, which is just what we need now. So, you know, we say we are syncretizing, and it's part of our Bodhisattva Coyote Presents Sufi, Aikido, Celtic, Balinese, Amazonian voodoo. That's what we know. So by way of weaving welcoming context for our encore guest, Michael Stewart Ani, an ally in perpetuity, a song by Manu Chao from his great CD, Clandestino, Por el Suelo. Here's the song.
Por el suelo hay una compadrita que ya nadie se para mirar. Por el suelo hay una mamacita que se muere de no respetar. Pachamama, te veo tan triste. Pachamama, me pongo a llorar. Esperando la última ola, cuídate, no te vaya a mojar. Escuchando la última rola, mamacita, te invito a bailar. Por el suelo camina mi pueblo, por el suelo hay un agujero, por el suelo camina la raza, mamacita, te vamos a matar. Esperando la última ola, Pachamama, me muero de pena. Escuchando la última rola, mamacita, te invito a bailar.
Por el suelo camina mi pueblo, por el suelo muriendo condena. Por el suelo el infierno quema, por el suelo la raza va ciega.
Esperando la última ola, Pachamama, me muero de pena. Escuchando la última rola, mamacita, te invito a bailar.
Ah, yes. Well, welcome. And so now, by way of welcoming, that was Manu Chao, Clandestino, Por el Suelo, for the soil, for the earth. So we welcome back in perpetuity our ally, Michael Stewart Ani, on the eve of his book tour, Journey, Ghost Dance, and his intimate partnership with the Amazon, all of her children, including the humans as well, and entheogenic sacraments of kinship. Everything is trying to heal us or kill us. And it is, of course, will we find the thing that heals us before we kill it? Oh, God. So welcome, Michael Stewart Ani.
Welcome, Caroline. A pleasure to be here with you once again.
Excellent. That's great. So your journey, your journey backwards, but your journey that you're on the brink of right now, or on whatever better word, threshold, the path unfurling before you is you're where are you going and what are you saying, and take it from
great.
There.
Great. Yeah. Give me a chance for a little plug. Yeah. On June 29th at 7:00, I'm going to be in Pecos, New Mexico, right outside of Santa Fe. And then on July 2nd, I'll be in Taos, and then I'll be winding it up on the 5th at the famous Trident bookstore in Boulder, Colorado, kind of a place where I actually started out from. That bookstore has been there well over a half a century, and still Peter, the owner, is still there. And then also I'm going to wind it up at the Psilocybin Summit, which is going to be on the 20th and 22nd of September. And any further information, you can just go to my Facebook site, Michael Stewart Ani, and the information will be there.
So wait, the Psilocybin Summit on the 22nd of September, which is when the Eleusinian Mysteries happened. Where's that? What good timing. Well, how consciously thought.
Yeah, well, I didn't know that, but it's from a fellow, Daniel, out of Marin County. They contacted me, and it's going to be broadcast on the internet. So I believe you got to go to the Psilocybin Summit site and sign in, and further information will be given. And what Daniel's really trying to do is bring forth the concept that there's a lost history behind the psilocybin that's been kind of left out in this incredible rush of awareness we've had in the unbelievable legalization in Oakland and in Denver, which is really something incredibly opportunistic because, let's face it, at this point, we need to go through a consciousness transmutation, humanity in general needs to see things in a different way for our own survival. So I'm very excited that the possibility of bringing in the backstory, not the created story that's happening now, which has lots of people putting out and it's fabulous. But I'm always a believer that if you don't respect the roots of the tree itself does not bear fruit. So I'm talking about the roots of all where all this understanding of entheogenic plants and specifically psilocybin come from, which is the belief systems of the Sierra Mazateca and Huautla de Jimenez prior to the Catholic and then New Age transitions that it's gone through in the last 20 years.
That's great. Right, because see again, you know, part of the where we're being helped out our rogue and sketchy species, you know, is that everything in a way sort of start. It's not the Big Bang; it's the big undulating, and so everything starts off in a way kinned, and then diaspora, and then now it wants to come back together. And I just when I was using the New Orleans Voodoo Tarot, which is a syncretization of voodoo and the Kabbalah, I was like, wow, this really works well. And my friend, the ancestor now, Marcelino Cruces Centero, said, oh, well, they started off together, the Kabbalah and what became Santeria in Nigeria. And I go, oh, that's really cool. And they come back together. So what you're saying also is the Sierra Mazateclan, and then let me just throw in the Eleusinian Mysteries, where everyone, you know, Carl Rook and the great Scott and Gordon Wasson wrote On the Road to Eleusis. And they said, you know, every 400 years, you know, and everybody's guaranteed a vision, there's a plant involved. And it was basically a kind of ergot brew LSD plus mushrooms. And people would walk to Eleusis, drink this brew, dance all night, and then everyone saw Persephone having gone down a maiden returning an initiated queen. Anyway, so yeah, so that starts out the West and the East, and then so say more again. I love you as custodian of so much, and Amazonian. The warnings, right? Because we to and fro on Facebook and backstage in many ways, but you know, Bolsonaro unleashing 100 new pesticides, most of which have been banned in the European Union, and you were like, "Wake up, people!" I toss it to you on that one.
Yeah, well, you brought up two fascinating points. First is that, you know, when we think of psilocybin, we think of it, the sacred mushroom, the magic mushroom, and the belief, and there are a very ancient Bible that depicts it, that the actual fruit of knowledge was a mushroom. And now that we know more of the effects of these mushrooms, it's much more logical that humankind got a vision from a mushroom than, let's say, an apple. And at the end of that cycle, we have the vision of the mushroom cloud of destruction of the nuclear age. And now, as you're saying, we come this full circle to where, at this point, we're in such climatic trouble that people are starting to become aware that maybe this thing that sent us on our journey and could be the symbol of the end of the journey is a great key and cure so we can survive and continue our journey. And of course, segueing to Jair Bolsonaro, he is absolutely bent on ending that journey. He is very much into promoting an evangelical belief in the end of days, and he has outright stated that he wants to destroy the tribes of the Amazon in the way the Seventh Cavalry and such did during the Plains Wars with the indigenous people in the United States. And he's claiming that this is for the progress and the benefit of the world. But the irony in it is that most of our scientists now realize that this isn't for the benefit of the world. This is going to destroy the world. This man almost has it in his power to take down the entire infrastructure of the Amazon, which is hanging on by barely a thread and only protected by the indigenous people. The illusion has been that technology, which is fascinating and fantastic on many levels, but it has not environmentally protected and saved us. In fact, at this point, it's done much more damage than it's done good in relation to the environment. It hasn't gotten us through it. And what we are seeing clearly is that the places where indigenous people have been left alone and remain intact are the healthiest environments on the planet. So what is this telling us in this moment of survival that we have to really focus? And of course, here's a man who is out to destroy that. And it has come out in the last couple of weeks that a lot of the funding he's received for this destruction, for these pesticides and his very questionable campaign to become president came from the United States. So we're back in that cycle. Excuse me?
Oh, and Steve Bannon helping to run the campaign, and the Dementors of Doom, and Italian
Steve
fascism.
Steve Bannon in the middle of all of it, Caroline.
No, right, and his Black Magic Academy in Italy, and anyway, no, the nefariousness. No, it is everywhere, and again, you know, that's why I've so love the medicine you carry, and then also this model of Wait a minute. Don't know what's going on here. Oh, it's a siren outside. It's the wail of Persephone. It's a siren out in the streets. Everything is speaking to us mythologically, apparently. Yeah, that's what it is. Well, the emergency bell. Well, we've been saying this for 800 years that the emergency bell has been going on so loudly, we tend to ignore it. But now it is again. But we're not. And so, yeah, so there's the, well, So this looks just so ghastly, and as you know more than most, because you would tell us again, you know, you've spent so much time with previously uncontacted Brazilian tribes in the Amazon, and what we spoke of before on radio, you know, is that guiding wisdom, you know, is the plants and the ingenuity and nature's trickery to somehow protect it. And I mean, there have been some recent victories, right?
Well, for me, a personal victory is in our relationship, Caroline, because I, who, when I first came back to the States in the 70s and spoke about, I saw the unraveling at the edge of the world, and I spoke to the Inter-American Bank, the World Bank, World Health, I spoke to some fairly heady places. People were entertained by me, but they basically wrote me off as a curious monkey entertaining them. And now we've come to a place where I kind of got the name of the Duke of Doom back then, because I was kind of like Coxy Loxy yelling, the sky's falling. But now we know we're in terrible danger and the situation. And I've changed. And from talking to you and being in the jungle, and by the way, just to be straight, many of the I've been with Brazilian tribes, but most of the tribes I've been with in the Amazon have been in Colombia, Peru, and mostly Venezuela. And some of the Venezuelan tribes go back and forth, and the Colombian tribes, they're both Brazilian, and Venezuelan and Colombian tribes, they don't have awareness of border in the jungle. But I have a huge hope that we're going to find some way out of this predicament. But I don't see that hope in the politicians. I don't see that hope in technology, although technology has done wonderful things. Let's take a look. How's it working out for us? Many scientists say we have 5 years before the whole thing collapses. So technology has not gotten us out of that problem. And in fact, it's been part of creating the problem. But I believe that there are forces that I've seen and witnessed deep in the forest, deep within these people, that are very real and very powerful and very tuned into the Pachamama, the Mother Nature herself. And she is the number one contender here. And I still believe in the end what she says goes. And I think she and nature and the indigenous people in the forest and entheogenics are going to have incredibly brilliant awakenings for us that we've never seen coming. And things are really going to change. And of course, there's going to be death. Death is written into the contract of everyone alive. We all face that. But I have great hope that nature will prevail over the silliness of human greed. And I just want to say that although all of us have greed and all of us are part of this, I've learned in the forest, seeing it firsthand, that the damage us individuals do, even together, is minute compared to the damage of these great corporate destroyers and the people that Jair Bolsonaro is bringing in to destroy the Amazon. We are very small. We are a destruction, but it's a very small group of people that are doing 99% of destroying the planet for all of us, which is our planet. How did they get the right to do this when it's all of ours? Why did they get this privilege? And I think that's a question we all have to face now. Why this small group holds the destiny of all of us in their hands? And they seem to be very spoiled, rotten people who do not care about any of us. So I think we need to look at that.
Right. Well, you said the magic answer in your words. The word privilege means etymologically private law. Right. There we have it. Right there in the word private law. And it is everything speaking to us. That's why a kind of symbolic and entheo understanding of the world, because it's trying to speak to us all the time. But yeah, and then the Mars rapacious devouring the technology of destruction is so huge. I mean, humans have always had some nefariousness, but I love to bring up our ancestral ally, the great anarchist Sir Herbert Reed, who said, only those serving an apprenticeship to nature can be trusted with technology. There we go.
I love that one. That's a great one.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it. Take that on your book tour. It's useful for everybody because it resonates going, oh, that's, yeah, and take that, Bill Gates. Right, because again, the out of control Mars, right, and Mars is in Cancer right now in the sky, which is know, strong enough to be gentle, and the green man is hero, and, you know, all that you love and all that you're dedicated to, and your allies in, you know, in everywhere, right? And the future allies, you know, again, strong enough to be gentle is crucial. But so the immature, you know, the Mars with no Venus, because I was thinking also that watching Hope Hicks and Ivanka, these blank, soulless, possessed faces for whom the word vapid rises up kind of out of the magic eight ball, going, vapid was made for that, going, whoa. And it is a kind of possession. So, right, everything's speaking to us in that way. But let me toss back to you, you know, when we were speaking backstage, and I said, right, all that you just said, absolutely, only hope, Pachamama Alliance is working on this. It looks so terrible, but we got to do it. But you said that you had actually seen the Vibrio flesh-eating bacteria, right? You've seen that on
a friend? Well, what happened, an acquaintance scraped his toe on a rock in New Mexico, and he got it. And that's the first curious thing. Now you've been speaking about it in the ocean. When you and I grew up near the ocean, we've talked about this, whenever either of us was sick, we jumped in the ocean and we were better.
Yeah.
Now it's not doing that. It's allowing things like this to live in it. He got it on land. And wow. I watched it literally eat the flesh of it. I mean, alien, unbelievable. And they wanted to amputate his leg, and he wouldn't let them, and he fought to keep the leg, and he did. And in the end, when it stopped, the leg looked basically like if you remove the flesh and you can see all the ligament and muscles underneath the flesh in fine definition with scarring on it. And obviously, there was a slim layer of epidermis over it to keep it in place. But it was really, it opened my eyes for weeks just looking at it. It's a very serious thing and a serious sign, because it's coming out of the ocean now. It's coming out of our hospitals. And what it's telling me is not emotionally Mother Nature is angry at us and turning on us and doing terrible things to us. What it's telling me is Mother Nature is her immune system is defending her. And in this case, we're the invasive. We've become from being a creature like a virus that lives in our body or lives on our body, a bacteria that we've grown accustomed to and we live with, which is a great deal of who we are. We were that to nature, but somehow we have changed and become virulent again and destructive to her after she had acclimated. We had acclimated to her over time, and now we've changed, and her immune system is quite obviously waging attack upon what's hurting her, and in this case, it's us.
Right.
And so we've come to odds with her.
Right. And it's, you know, innocent us, if there are any innocents, you know, again, nature, not sentimental. It's people crabbing or preparing seafood in a restaurant or whatever that is. And you'd also spoken of, you know, the manifold horror of this cruel destruction of the rain of the Amazon. And you've also referenced it as that's where so many, you know, viruses and interesting things are, and they're meant to be there. And it's like, it's unleashed. Yes. Pandora's box, right? It's, and the same with Ebola in Africa. You know, again, these are deep in the jungle. No, don't cut the jungle down. Back to you.
Yes,
to say more.
You got it exactly. You know, when they built the Kinshasa Highway across Africa, and they went into these remote regions, that's when Ebola and AIDS virus, the back viruses to AIDS, and Marsburg, how they all came out. It was a beautiful metaphor painting the rainforest as the lungs of the earth, but it's not scientifically true. If the earth is a living thing like you and I believe, it bleeds through a skin. Every tree in Maryland or California, anywhere, is important as a tree in the Amazon. But what it actually is and not a metaphor. It's part of the immune system of the earth, because these viruses are ancient. They're a million years old. They're not new. And the forest buffered them from the human herd, which is us. So even if they attacked an indigenous community through Wayumi and ancient practices, the people there knew how to deal with it. They'd disperse in the forest until it went away, and then they'd come back together so it wouldn't spread. We have nowhere to disperse anymore. So what's happened now is these viruses can jump on a plane, a train, and that block that the forest naturally creates to keep it away from us, exactly what you say, we haven't opened Pandora's box. We've torn down Pandora's box and let it out. And that's what we're thinking. And what a mistake that is.
Yes, with hope. And why is it Pandora? I want to examine all the myths, and especially all the Greek myths, going, now, wait a minute there. I did just finish reading a pretty fantastic read, Circe, by, I can't remember, a fantastic woman writer. But the Greeks are pretty gloomy, but it's got its place. I love a friend saying the essence of Greek theater is, it's going to get you. Mush. It did.
Yeah, the Greeks were pretty heavy-handed with that. Yeah,
right, but the novel Circe is pretty great that way. And there was some specific reason why I thought to bring it up, but it'll come around again. It's a great book. It is a really great read, and she's really animating. Although, you know, Greeks are not a barrel of laughs, but the myths and the difference between wise witchcraft and gods. Very, very interesting. And she goes, the real witchcraft, the crafting with plants, takes work, right? And we might want to replace gods with wizards and witches doing real healing craft. And that was, you know, part of it. But anyway, yeah. So the viruses are jumping on a plane. They have a platinum American Express card. They're traveling in. And so I think this is important. You know, again, everything speaking to us. The rise, and Paul Stamets talks about this too. I mean, the rise, you know, when a species goes rogue, you know, there are viral and bacterial responses. But I also thought it was, and poison ivy and jellyfish are doing great with heating. And I was admiring
they come from
the
destruction directly. You know, poison oak and those things, when they cut down the forest, it grows in destroyed forest. The jellyfish, the same.
Right. Right. And there was a news, an event, I don't know, some years ago, but I'm always scanning for that, which is the radioactive, the nuclear power plant at Diablo Canyon, was shut down by this influx of jellyfish at the same time that a nuclear power plant in the north of Scotland was shut down by jellyfish. And I go, there's poetry there, that they're going home to take down the thing that is helping to bring them about, you know. I go, and poison ivy surround the nuclear power plants too. It's like, how do we work with all this? You know, how do we have the, no, not there, but over here. There we go. So we don't want to commit hubris. We don't know what the viruses should do. But what would be your image of the restoration of harmony in the rainforest or in the Amazon?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question, because, you know, you and myself have been asked many times, okay, we hear you talk about all the problems. Where's the solutions? You know, the truth is, there are real solutions. It's just they've been so disguised in illusion, we don't see them. And I always go back to the story of the discovery of El Corral in Peru, and a female anthropologist, archaeologist there, she discovered that the community lasted for 875 years without warfare. And the first people said, it's because they were all drugged on ayahuasca and they were slaves. But what they actually found out was it was the earliest place they discovered irrigation and the domestication of cotton. And someone there figured out, probably through an ayahuasca vision, to weave it into fishnets, which they brought to the coast. The coastal people brought them food, and that's how they discovered it. El Corral is an inland city, and all the waste was seafood there, and there was no military installations because they did such a quality instead of quantity job that all the tribes around them protected them to keep making this net, these fishing nets, to support all of their economy. So here's a paradigm very different from the paradigm that we've all been, even you and I, have been infiltrated with, that at the end of the day, might makes right wins. Whoever, you know, you can say all the good stuff, but whoever beats up the other person and gets the stuff, they're the winner. But that's not true. There's been other paradigms in history that have actually worked better, and the clock's ticking on us to find another one. And I'm a bit hopeful. It's very curious, but I'm a bit hopeful of the new awareness of theogenic substances and the sacraments and the ancient rituals that go to them, not just the ones invented now by people that are using it more for therapy. That's great, and that cures us of a lot of our social and diseases and mental problems of civilization. That's one part of it, but the starting to have a relationship with the forces of nature and plants and talking plants in the earth, that is a whole other part of this journey, which only has to do with the remote tribes and the sacraments they take, which are very different. Even though they may have the same names, they're very different. I know firsthand they're a completely different mushroom. Ayahuasca done very differently. And to me, that's about us communicating with nature and starting to learn how to deal with the climate. The Toltec had a way better understanding of how to deal with civilization and the environment than we did today, because they very specifically needed the crops to grow with not just sun and rain, but in a very specific order. And all of us are realizing now one thing for sure about nature, whether it's global warming or it's climatic this, what we do see, the order of nature, which some of us who are older grew up with, has really dissolved. Nature is not following its order at all. And that's a very scary situation. So we, for civilization to survive, because we can't walk away from this, we're not nomads, we're in one place. We need to reestablish that. And I believe the first step is what's happening with the legalization of the psychedelics. It's not the miracle drug that's going to solve the problem, but it will get people thinking hopefully more about the ancient roots of these beliefs and the ancient substances that these people in the forest, I have witnessed firsthand, can communicate with the elements of nature and talking plants, and they do establish relationship. And if we kill these people off, the very people who know the skill to do this, Bolsonaro is basically trying to commit suicide for humanity. We need to protect these tribes and their belief systems. It is literally, I believe, our key to survival.
Right. And it is anything that's anywhere is everywhere. It's the same also that the shows we've been doing with Terrence Ward about the invasion of the Wahhabis, up until 1924, Mecca was a center of Sufi Islamic tolerance and beauty and poetry and ecstatic kinship with everything. And then the Wahhabis invaded in 1924. But the connection is, and to do that, they had to destroy the past. They paved over parking lots over Fatima's daughter's house and just destroyed.
And interesting enough, they invaded from the north. They invaded from the north, just like we're doing. It's curious that the invasion, the Wahhabi in Saudi Arabia, invaded from the north, just like we're invading from the north. So that's a curious part of it too. The north and the south and how they play against each other as environment.
Right. And then, of course, we got the South going on. Here's dengue fever for you. Right. So, no, but also what you were saying about in Peru.
It's right, so dengue. Because,
changing dengue, right? Well, you mean because the virus and the bacteria are so smart right now. I mean, they're evolving smarter than the human. Exactly. They're adopting faster than humans. Is that what you're saying? No. Yeah, well, so we want to be
exactly that.
More it's a. Well, it's an ingenuity enthusiasm poker contest. And I see your ingenuity, and we're going to bring bigger ingenuity to it. We're not going to fight you with poison. We're going to bring bigger ingenuity. And I see your enthusiasm for killing the world. We're going to have greater enthusiasm for healing the world in participatory cahoots, you know, while eating mushrooms. But exactly what you said about in Peru, El Corral, I was in Malta, because we go everywhere where we're called. At the time, reading about the excavations at El Corral, going, no evidence of a military, no defense stuff, thousands and thousands of flutes, right? Spirals everywhere. And that's what Malta, if you go back far enough, go back, you know, deeper back in Malta, no evidence of military, spirals everywhere, thousands of musical instruments, incredible, you know, connection to Earth-sky dynamic, like in Peru. Go, yes, that thing, right? So I just wanted to second that, you know, where we sort of
Is that
yes,
not only yes. Was that Ruth Shoddy was the lady, by the way, who discovered that at El Corral, to give her credit, wonderful person. But what else was discovered at the time, and is at very close similar time, was they had found a female scientist, a German scientist, was doing the first research on the mummies from the Valley of the Queens in Egypt, not the kings. And she found traces of coca and tobacco, right, which only come from the New World. So first, Oxford and Harvard and these people and Yale said, oh, well, it was tainted. You know, obviously someone had some coke on their fingers or tobacco. But she persisted and pushed on. And then people said, well, obviously there were other places in the world where it grew then. Well, they have a lot of records from that era of the journeys, and there are no other places. So they really, in the end, established, not to say exactly that someone from Egypt or the fact that there were trade routes between these ancient, right, civilizations, thousands of years old. And modern history has erased that and placed it with borders. You know, this is a big issue to me. I'm very much an American. I've traveled in Asia and other places that I've loved and loved the people. But my heart's very much American. But when I say American, I mean Alaska, Canada, United States, Mexico, Central America, South America. These are the Americas. And we were at one time all held together by one mycelium that grew through all the Americas. It was our plant internet network between the land, and before even the conquest, the building of the temples and all broke up this mycelia in the earth, what I call the true tree of the subterranean tree of life, and broke them up in a way that we've lost that connection, and then outsiders come in and put up borders. And now they tell little American children who are true Native Americans, oh, you can't come into this part of America. Oh, we've destroyed your part of America with our rapid exploitation, but you can't come to this. And I'm very much an Americanist that way, is the Americas is what we're about. And it will be the indigenous people that help unite the Americas together, because they do not see borders in the same way that quote Western civilized people do.
Right. And again, may everything in all of us be sort of stirred, going, wait a minute, a memory, an ancient memory. For me, an ancient memory of a radio guest a long time ago, AD was talking about, oh, I'll summon it from the archive somehow. But it was, yeah, we found these incredibly spherical carved huge stones in Costa Rica, and we can measure them, but we can't create them, right? So they're marvels. And the author was, saying there was a figure eight kind of oceanic, you know, current of trading, exactly as you said, and ties in Mesoamerica and Egypt, which apparently is that, as you say, mysterious and interesting. And the sharing of medicines and the tobacco and the cocaine seems real. And there were these, you know, kind of figure eight currents, and the word atl is a Mesoamerican word, atl, Atlantic, Atlantis. It means water, right? I mean, it's ocean. So yeah, they were going,
atl is water in Nahuatl, yes, yeah.
Right, in Nahuatl. So yeah, that ATL prefix, Atlantis, Atlantic, anyway, so all of these things. So it resonates, you know, and if it's not true, let's make it true. Meaning just the confluence, like where we started, you know, we know like the Eleusinian mysteries, and then we have the modern version of the psilocybin summit, right? There we go. All right. And all of these things, you know, should be satirized and honored both, just to keep them honest. I think it's great. But, you know, in that way of, you know, that, so for instance, the astromythology of now is very heartening. We're always being proffered such generous reminders. Oh, okay. But so the sun at 5K, Cancer, you know, incarnation of Big Mama, squares Chiron at 5 Aries. And Chiron, you know, not the people say the wounded healer and Chiron, and I go, that's the boring part. Just stop it. Just stop that worshiping of the wound thing. As a credential, for God's sake, Chiron's the first mentor school for future cultural heroes, but he founds the Asclepions, mythic figure. Years founding real things, like the Eleusinian mysteries were founded by Ceres Demeter, goddess of the earth. So we know that humans used to gather at times of personal or collective, like, to gather vision, to be available, to be guided and informed by larger forces than their own. This is a hallmark of a civilization, right? So in a rudimentary form, I guess, you know, what you were saying, like the psilocybin summit and stuff, these things are coming back. Very often without a conscious traditional link, right? But I want to toss it to you because you know and have lived with people who do have a continuous unbroken link to their tradition. Oh wait, let me fit in one last little cuckoo thing here. But yeah. I love that you said, you know, some ways back that to eat psilocybin mushrooms in pairs so they won't be lonely. I'm like, that is so charming. Anyway, didn't you say that?
Yeah, absolutely. That is the tradition. You never need them alone, so their journey to the land of the dead will not be lonely.
That's so very charming.
Yeah. Oh no. I. You know. And what you just said to me is so.
So. Yeah. The unbroken. So the unbroken tradition. That you know people.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, just like you said, I truly believe. All of us in this reality, in the media reality of the world we live in, we are attempting, as you say, with the summit and other programs, to find the group ritual that brings us together. And of course, we know that one of the most historic times in Western history of that was during the 60s, which I lived through. And one of the faults I saw in that, for many of the wonderful things that came from it, because I did leave it fairly early and go off into the jungle. So I was kind of looking in at it as opposed to being in the middle of it for quite a while, is that if you abandon the roots of it, if you just say, okay, these people have thousands of years of history figuring out how to work, how to speak with these plants. But we have the gift, because we're very special, of reinventing it ourselves. Like the 60s, you start to spin out into all these other places. There's no grounding from the roots. And I think it is absolutely key, not as much for the first phrase, which is basically a lot of these psychedelics are now being used, and MDA and such, to heal us of our society problems. They're about healing individuals. So it's a form of therapy, really, whether people do a little ceremony or what. It's really therapy to help people in their problems, which is absolutely necessary, because if people don't get help, they're not going to hear at this great ritual as you're speaking about, we're coming together. But without the ability to understand the thousands of years of accumulated knowledge of how you deal with this. And of course, to me, the key, people say to me, well, you say talking plants, and if I get something or a synthetic psychedelic from a friend, why am I not talking with the plants? Well, what I say to them is, it took me almost 15 years or more to understand the language of DC2. It took me 12 years to even understand part of the language ayahuasca speaks in. So this quick fix Western mentality does not work with the other one. As we know, when you're sick, to really heal yourself, you don't do it in a second. If you've hurt yourself in a way where you're sick for 3-4 years, then it's going to take some time to unfix that. You can't do it in a second. And I'm using that metaphor for the world here today. It's those people who have the timing and the understanding. And I not only firsthand have witnessed it many times because I had the rare privilege. What I learned, the reason why I was able to move among very remote tribes and often extremely hostile tribes where many people said there's no way they're not going to kill you, was that they recognized that I had been schooled and I had spoken with the plants and I knew their way. So in using those ceremonies and me speaking to their ancestors, because those people will not trust you like we will trust you. Oh, you show your credibility, you give them something of your email, who you are, and they go, oh, that's you. Their ancestors have to accept you for them to accept you. So you have to learn their rituals. So I had the great gift to go through the process of really studying and learning those rituals over many, many years, learning those languages to speak with the plants over years. And I'm afraid in our giant rush towards an unknown future and a rush of financial gain put on it, which I'm not condemning or condoning, but it does put a factor on it, that like in the 60s, we forget about where this came from and we're lost. And that's very much my message. What I feel I have to offer is there are some great people out there who are strong proponents of the psychedelic awakening we're having, but very few people alive today know who can articulate it and get it across in languages the mass of the world can understand, where it comes from and what these things that gave birth. In my belief system, the whole psychedelic movement of America started in the Sierra Mazateca in Huautla, because Gordon Wasson, when the CIA wanted his information for military purposes, he purposely released it in Life magazine so they couldn't have it. Timothy Leary read that article. And although there's some people saying bad things about Timothy Leary now, he was a friend of mine, and I thought he was a magnificent human being. And I know back then he was aware that if he did not in some way release it to the masses, it would end up in the hands of the CIA military. That's been left out of the dialogue about him. And I have personally spoken to him about that subject. He was very aware he was in a very tricky place with that. And he made a choice, whether it was the right choice or not, I'm not going to say. But I thought he was an amazing person, and he made, in my opinion, the right choice. So, yes, there's different stages. If we can have the awakening of the culture taking place in the modern world and meeting the knowledge of the world where it came from, and the key to that is the saying I always say, Ninashkatachili, the gods give to those who give to the gods, is that when I was taught when I was young, they told me I would not go further unless I paid. I gave back for what I was getting. And my giving back was, instead of coming back to the United States and trying to sell then what I had, I went to fight epidemics for the most remote tribes on Earth, because that's what DC2 and that spirit wanted. They wanted to show that I was truly giving to what DC2 called his children. And what interesting happened, why I did that, is how I not only gave, but through that and through their acceptance, because I gave to them and they opened to me, that's how I learned their secrets and mysteries and became aware of them. What we have today, an interesting thing that I went through, people say, oh, we've traveled the world and we found the sacred masters and we've brought them together for you to pray tonight or speak tonight. Well, it's always curious to me that typically when I go to a new tribe, it's 2.5 years basically until they totally stop lying to me. And then they go, okay, we're going to stop lying now. So the idea that people could whiz around the world and they're so gifted that they can pick up the sacred hidden masters and find them at your local mission, by the way, because they don't know how to go into the jungle. They don't know how to speak the language. They don't know how to survive in the jungle. So they're finding them at the missions of the very people that are at the root of the problem and coming and telling the new age and the people here that these are sacred masters because they're rich people and they say so. I don't know if that answers the question. I don't want us. This is a point in history where our very survival depends on our actions. We can't make a lot of mistakes now. So I'm trying to use my wisdom of my years to stay to the point of what I'm doing and make sure that voice from the forest, that voice that's crying out from the wilderness, is heard and translated and understood.
Right. So may we have what you're contributing in many forms, you know, discerning team, discerning. And when you said the quick fix, I just remember sitting at Joseph Campbell's feet, kind of literally, the Grail, and he would say, when he would present things like, well, we're all befoibled, and in the fairy tale, you start off and then you blow it, and then you do things, and then slowly, and then you become. You know, you want to give back to the world and you're wise, you know. And he said a young woman came up to him and said, why, Dr. Campbell, we just go directly from youth to wisdom. And he said, that's great. All you've missed is life. He said, I felt pretty good about that. I mean, he was an old codger. But I think it's really crucial, you know, he was. Yeah, I mean, and Tim Leary befoibled. We're all befoibled. But, you know, and all the candidates are befoibled. But nuance, we like this medicine, not that thing, but this over here to honor that. And I think, you know, part of it is the micro to the macro, what you were saying. So I think invaluable, you know, about ayahuasca and things in their context, it's a mysterious riptide we're in, right? About ancient meeting modern, traditional, and so on. And riptides are fertile places in the ocean. I mean, and bumpy, it's a tricky thing. So, mm-hmm. You know, there's good things, and I think the plants are wiser than the humans. They want to reach us. But I have seen a lot of people, you know, not called on stuff on their ayahuasca journey, like, I am the great savior, and I will do this, and I will abandon my family and go be a shaman. And it's like, no, stop it. Anyway, so discernment. And then the other thing that you said, because that I want to toss back to you as we begin our closing, I think exactly what you said beautifully. The dedication of personal healing to collective well-being. Otherwise, it's Hinayana honky in a hot tub. You know, it's like I where I've got grown. Yes, I don't want to be a cranky old lady completely. But you know, the entheogenic groups going where people are like, well, my mother was mean to me when I was 10. I go, you're 68. Just what are you going to do for the world? I have so yes, personal healing. Yeah, but not wuzza. That's not the whole point. It's like, may the dedication of personal healing be dedicated to collective well-being, you know, and I feel so strongly with the entheogens to gather in a way that is like, and how can we participate now, this fantastic opportunity to open doors of communication with forces, and people are like, fending off wonder. I have a whole category called prison disguised as freedom in many forms, But I want to toss it to your beautiful self. You're on your book tour. You're spiraling out, and then the last little thing, and I'll give you the last minutes here. But it is a beautiful time we're convening. The moon exalted in Taurus is conjoining Uranus, whose image is a bridge over a deep gorge, getting from there to here, and radically traditional. And it is in a beautiful angle to the sun. And Cancer, that what we need to know is coming to us, and it squares Mercury and Leo, that the only theater is Earth theater. And let me hand it back to you for the last 2 minutes. Here we go, because you're going to be a voice for all of this, which is so essential. That's wonderful. And what blessing would you like to have to receive, and what do you want to put forth?
Yeah, very, very well put. And yes, I think, as you said, we are at this moment. And of course, as you know so well, that the stars and the heavenly bodies and the ocean, it's all together. It's all part of this grand mystery we're in. And I who was once the Duke of Doom, I do have hope. My hope is mostly because in ceremony in the forest, Dishi Tu and other plants told me, in the end, you're not going to believe what's going to happen. Things are going to happen that no one's expecting. Now, in my mind, the first thing you always think of, you know, Martians landing on the front lawn of the White House, that would unite us. You know, we're so at each other's throats. We need something big to unite us. And I don't know much about that stuff. So I'm just using that as just the, you know, that something very big will come along and humanity will be at that moment where we have to take that look at ourselves. And hopefully at that point, we will have moved enough rapidly, as we're moving very quickly now, to a point to grasp that. As a conversation I had with Timothy Leary, and I asked him, I said, you know, you started out taking mushrooms in Mexico. The psychedelic book was all about your experience. But yet, when you came back to the States, you went right off on the East India thing. And, you know, not a wonderful, wonderful thing, but not where the roots of this. Why did you do that? And he laughed. He said, nah, that was just a Richard Albert buying me Indian clothes. That was never my thing. He said, me? I came out of the world of chemistry, where chemistry in the 50s was going to solve every problem on the earth. So you, meaning me, I looked at it more, not anthropology per se, but from an indigenous, from the people. He said, that was not really my mindset. My mindset was chemicals. But this was when he was older. But he said, but I've changed. I see the chemicals have not worked out for us. And now I look and see these chemicals have really harmed us. So as you and I talk about so often, we need to get out of that box and we need our minds to start thinking about real solutions to the planet, real bonds with indigenous people that are outside the box, because I don't believe the politicians.
All right, we're
on our way out.
We're on our way out. I don't believe in the politicians, all right, but we don't want to end on that exact note because nature is speaking through us, and everything in our journey that's ever been important to us is rising now for us, and we can do it against all odds. I think that'll do it for now. But thank you to the KPFA team, of course, and thank you, Michael Stewart Ani, Spiral Fourth Lad, you know, be a theatrical, mesmerizing voice for what you know, that it stir in us, because it is in us. And we will reconvene next week. It's Caroline Casey, CoyoteNetworkNews.com. Woof.